Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Then he amalgamated all the sense organs into the mind, then the mind into life, life into breathing, his total existence into the embodiment of the five elements, and his body into death. Then, as pure self, he became free from the material conception of life. I think I break it in a very interesting way. Sorry for that. Purport. Maharaj Yudhishthir, like his brother Arjuna, began to concentrate and gradually became freed from all material bondage. First, he concentrated all the actions of the senses and amalgamated them into the mind. Or in other words, he turned his mind towards the transcendental service of the Lord. He prayed that since all material activities are performed by the mind in terms of actions and reactions of the material senses, and since he was going back to Godhead, excuse me, the mind would wind up its material activities and be turned towards the transcendental service of the Lord. There was no longer a need for material activities. Actually, the activities of the mind cannot be stopped, for they are the reflection of the eternal soul, but the quality of the activities can be changed from matter to the transcendental service of the Lord. The material color of the mind is changed when one washes it from contaminations of life breathing and thereby frees it from the contamination of repeated births and deaths and situated in pure spiritual life. All is manifested by the temporary embodiment of the material body, which is a production of the mind at the time of death. And if the mind is purified by practice of transcendental loving service to the Lord and is constantly engaged in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, there is no more chance of the mind's producing another material body after death. It will be freed from absorption in material contamination. The pure soul will be able to return home, back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Salakayam Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Miti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So when I received this verse and when I read it first time, I was thinking this is pretty heavy, very kind of a very philosophical, very technical verse, and I just didn't know what to do with this. So so I just started reading it more and more, and then I was thinking how to present it. Well, the best way is to put some kind of a practical application to it. What does this mean to us? And how can we actually utilize and see this verse in perspective? How Maharaj Yudhishthir actually, more than anything, this is actually a verse of preparation. Right? So I would like to start with opening with one verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam 7th canto. And this is Prahlad Maharaj speaking. Therefore, while in material existence, bhavam ashrita, a person fully competent to distinguish wrong from right must endeavor to achieve the highest goal of life as long as the body is stout. Stout? Stout? Stout, thank you. And strong and is not embarrassed by dwindling. This is Bhagavatam 7:6.5. So we can see that how Prahlad Maharaj is actually preaching to the young boys in the Gurukul. And he's saying that there's no better time than now to start spiritual life or spiritual journey. We can see that Maharaj Yudhishthir, if you put it in perspective, Maharaj Yudhishthir had a long life. His life was full of kind of ups and downs. In the end of his life, he was king and emperor of the whole planet. He was ruling over millions, billions of people all around the planet. He was not only the protector of the humans, he was a protector of animals. He was protector of all the beasts, trees, fishes in the sea. He was ruling everything. So you can imagine what it means to be such a managerial position. For those of you who have some managerial positions, is it a headache, correct? It must be sometimes kind of a difficulty, or it's a challenge. So we can see in the life of Maharaj Yudhishthira that after so many years of constantly dealing with politics, constantly dealing with diplomacy, constantly dealing with creating a discrimination between what is good and what is bad, now the time finally comes when he can actually retire. After so many decades of dealing with so many problems, now is the time to make the adjustments, to leave the planet, to leave my position, to leave my family, to leave my material opulence, to leave everything behind and fully absorb myself in the transcendental service of the Lord. The technicality of this verse is actually indicating that this was suitable for the previous age, right? This whole absorbing the sound into the mind, mind into the prana, prana into apana, and apana into death, death into material elements, is actually indicating very, very interesting stage of consciousness of Maharaj Yudhishthira. This sort of process is actually suitable for yogis. This sort of process is actually very unique for those who practice. Can anyone tell me what is actually the name of this yoga, of this specific practice? Can anyone give a guess? Say that again. Dhyan is a meditation, but this involves also a lot of breathing. How about Hatha? Hatha yoga. In a Bhagavad Gita, in the 4th chapter, is actually explained the different process from the previous ages, how different yogis been leaving their body, and through air circulation, they can push the soul out of the body according to time, place, and circumstances. Prabhupada actually speaks in this class. That the yogis will become masters of the soul, because they can truly fix their mind and their body and their prana, their life airs, to such a degree that they can leave the body whenever they desire. So put it in this in a context. Yudhishthira Maharaj is not only a politician or a diplomat or a king or a fighter. He was actually a Raja Rishi. And Prabhupada emphasized this, that one occupation in the past was not actually discriminating other occupation. That does, if you've been a king, it actually you can also be a very powerful mystic yogi. If you've been a Brahmana, you can also understand the art and mysteries of Dhanurveda, or fighting. If you've been a Vaishya, you also know how to protect, right? Prabhupada said Vaishya should always protect the cows. How do you protect the cows if you don't know how to protect yourself? Therefore, Varnashra system was purely focused on certain dharma of an activity of the individuals, but sometimes it was mixing. So rishis, they know how to, you know, fight. And the kings, they know how to involve themselves in yogic process. So Prabhupada is emphasizing that Yudhishthira Maharaj had the knowledge how to leave the body accordingly with the Hatha yoga process, with the breathing and different pranic process. So we can see actually a timeline through last chapters. How did it start? Yudhishthira Maharaj was seeing all around him the different omens. We've been discussing this before. These different omens been signifying the departure of Krishna. Then the messenger came in the form of Arjuna. Arjuna came and said, yes, all this happened. Krishna has left the planet. the Yadus left the planet. The age of Kali is slowly kind of coming and grasping the hold on the society. That was the next step. The third step in the life of Yudhishthira Maharaj was making the decision. The decision was based on the circumstances. He understood, yes, the situation is now for me to retire. I'm still strong, as you mentioned, as we quoted this verse. I'm still strong and I still have some power. I still have focus, intelligence. My body still listens to me. Who was the counterpart of Yudhishthira Maharaj? Who was actually not following this process of Tyaga? Dhritarashtra. And when Vidura came to the palace of Hastinapur, that was when the burning period started, right? Vidura was just bombing and blasting constantly Dhritarashtra. Look at yourself. Your teeth are falling. Your organs are not functioning properly. You can't focus properly. You are here living like a dog in the house of Maharaj Yudhishthira. What are you doing with yourself? Just wake up and understand that now is the time to retire. So sometimes, thanks to the mercy of Vaishnavas like Vidura, even personalities like Dhritarashtra, they receive the impulse, the kind of the shock, the cutting of the brahmanas. But in the life of Maharaj Yudhishthira, it was different. It was very much different. He was so intelligent that he can understand the situation comes to a point when I have to leave. So what does it mean for us? We should be very sensitive to the time, place and circumstances and needs which are around us, which Maharaj Yudhishthira was. He was very sensitive. So in this connection, he was preparing himself. First point, how he prepared himself was externally, right? What was the external preparation that Maharaj Yudhishthira did? First of all, we've been reading in previous verses, he relinquished his garments, right? Every Varnashram, in the Varnashram system, you can actually see what is the stage of a person or what is his occupation of a person also externally, right? If you see a person wearing a loincloth, a danda, a kamandalu, if you see him wearing a kusha grass around his finger, if you see him having an umbrella, what does this indicate? Who is he? Which part of Varna he is? Also, it is mentioned that he could be a brahmachari. Also, brahmacharis, they've been receiving certain dandas. This is Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj in one of his commentaries and purports to Chaitanya Bhagavat. He speaks about the indications or lakshanas of different ashramas. If you see someone wearing a big belt, a crown on his head, a lot of jewelry, maybe a weapon, who would you say he is? Kshatriya. If you see someone occupying a forest, eating only some berries and nuts, and fully kind of dedicating himself in service of the Supreme, which stage in life he is? Vanaprastha. If you see someone being in the family affairs, earning money, taking care of different members, which stage of life he is? Grihastha. Therefore, certain externals actually indicating internal transition or internal mood. So here Maharaj Yudhishthira made, first of all, external changes. These external changes being that he changed his cloth, and also he'd done the sacrifice, the massive yajna which enthroned Maharaj Parikshit in the throne of Hastinapur. These are all externals. But in this verse is actually showing how Yudhishthira Maharaj is creating internal mood in his life. So I'll read the translation. Then he amalgamated all the sense organs into the mind. Then the mind into life, life into breathing, his total existence into the embodiment of the five elements, and his body into death. Then as pure self, he became free from material conception of life. Let me ask you a question. Did Maharaj Yudhishthira disappeared or something? Because it sounds like he into the embodiment of the five elements and his body into death. Did he disappear? Did he die? Did Maharaj Yudhishthira die? What do you think? It is said no. But here it says elements and his body into death. So what actually died? What actually died is the ego of Maharaj Yudhishthira. is the conception of Ahamameti, my and I, of Maharaj Yudhishthir. What actually died is the conception of who I think and who I was for my whole life. I was a king, I was a ruler, I was a diplomat, I was a father, I was a husband, I was a brother, I was a friend. All of these conceptions, all of these ahankars actually died. So this is a first verse in the Pandavas Retired Tamli, where it's actually showing that how Maharaj Yudhishthir made the internal decision, how he embraced the internal mood of a renunciate. So put this in a context. Every single morning we sit down, grab our beads. What do we do before we start chanting? Or do we just straight away jump? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Ram Ram, Ram Ram, Ram Krishna Krishna. What do? We sit down. We take certain breath in, breath out, right? We breathe a bit for a moment. We contemplate. We ask ourselves, why do I chant? Some of us, we read some verses. Some of us read some purpose from Srila Prabhupada. Some of us seek some inspiration, right? So this is actually internalizing the process. Those devotees which are on the altar and doing puja, those devotees which are dressing the deities and those devotees which are doing artis, it's not like they just jump on the altar and start, you know, take the lamp and start offering the lamp straight away. No, there's a preparation. This preparation means that you understand what is the goal, what is the means, and what is the philosophy. In other terms, Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. So this verse is Abhideya. Why is it Abhideya? Because he's practically applying the philosophy he learned from sages, from the Brahmanas. He started internalizing the process of Krishna consciousness. Not like he was not doing it before, no. He was doing it before, but in a different dharmic occupation. Now is the time to go to a transition. Now is the time to embrace a different varna, to embrace a different shelter. Now is the time to go into vanaprast. And later on we will see that actually Yudhishthira Maharaj, according to the Vedas, the Kshatriyas could also accept sannyas. So we can see how he just accept the loincloth and he just went on north. But that's for the future classes. So it means that whatever process we actually do, it doesn't start with the activity itself. It starts with the preparation, right? So let me ask you a question. In the japa period, what are the externals which help us to internalize devotional process or specifically chanting? What are the paraphernalia you surrounded yourself when you chant Hare Krishna? You sit in temple room, okay? What are the paraphernalia in the temple room? Rasa Raj Krishna Prabhu? Tulsi Maharani, perfect. Anything else? Ian Prabhu? Devotees, perfect, yes. Anything else? Pictures, perfect, yes. Anything else? Prabhupada, perfect. Anything else? Tilak, wonderful, yes. Anything else? Incense, perfect. Anything else? Rasa Raj Prabhu? Posture. All of these are actually externals. All of these are externals to help us go internally. So all of these are lakshanas. All of these are like external paraphernalias which help us to indicate and absorb ourselves internally. There's a big, big difference if you would be chanting in the middle of Liverpool or London, in your karmic clothes, in the middle of Oxford Street, and you're chanting Hare Krishna. And if you're in a temple room of the Bhaktivedanta Mano or any of the established temples of Prabhupada. Is that correct? What's the difference? Externals. All these external paraphernalias are helping us to actually go internally. So this last few verses here in the life of Yudhishthira Maharaj are actually indicating how even externals are important for practice internal Krishna consciousness. Behind the curtains there are deities. So whatever we do, we try to align the external with internal, right? White cloth represents something. Saffron cloth represents something. In mothers, this dot on the forehead represents something. All of these are external indications of internal moods of different Vaishnavas. So we can understand what is the stage of consciousness of another person. So this is the kind of a meditation and mood of Yudhishthir Maharaj. So just to come back to the process, Yudhishthir Maharaj used the process of Hatha Yoga, focusing with the in the breath, focusing in breathing, and offering different senses into the mind, into speech, into apana, into prana. So it is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita 15.7, the living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. Therefore, the struggle is always there. Yudhishthir Maharaj was struggling throughout his life with the difficulties from the side of the Kuru dynasty. And then when the time comes, he utilized the mind in a proper way to start his path back to Godhead. That's the external vision. We also understand that Yudhishthir Maharaj is eternal associate of Krishna. Therefore, these Uttama Adhikaris are teaching with their life. Their internal mood is completely different, but they're teaching as Acharya, means the one who shows the example. These Acharyas are showing by their struggles that how we can overcome these difficulties. Another verse in the Bhagavad Gita 2:58 is saying that one who is able to withdraw his senses from the sense objects as a tortoise draws its limbs within the shell is firmly fixed in perfect consciousness. So here Yudhishthir Maharaj is slowly withdrawing everything. Everything he's withdrawing. He withdraws the senses, the mind, the life airs, until the point when there's nothing else, just pure Krishna consciousness, pure consciousness of the soul. And with this meditation, with this consciousness, Yudhishthir Maharaj makes a further steps. So as we mentioned, he haven't left the body, he haven't died. Even if it seemingly looks like from this verse that there was some death was involved. No, the Ahankar died. Yudhishthir Maharaj continues his journey with clear Krishna consciousness, not contaminated with any politics which he was involved with his whole life. So therefore, to control the senses, you have understand, according to time, place, and circumstances, which yogic process to utilize. In Bhagavad Gita 4:27 is mentioned, others who are interested in achieving self-realization through control of the mind and senses offer the functions of all the senses and of the life breath as oblations into the fire of the controlled mind. So we've been speaking before, I think Paramakaruna Prabhu, he was speaking about the fire. Just like during the yagyas, we offer different paraphernalias into the fire. The same thing, the yogis offer different subtle paraphernalias into the fire of the controlled mind. So as Prabhupada was saying, Raja Rishi like Yudhishthir Maharaj was actually trained in this Hatha Yoga art. So let me speak a bit about these pranas, prana and apana. So within your body, you have 10 life airs, or 10 kind of airs which circulate. And these 10 airs have different activities which they perform within your body. Some of them, they go upwards. Some of them go downwards. Some of them are for even blinking the eyes. Some of them are for digestion. Some of them are for moving the muscles. Some of them are for evacuation. So different life airs have different purposes. So let me ask you a question. How is possible that your body actually moves? Where is that energy source? Or where is that medium which transforms the energy of the soul into a movement? Does anyone know? Mind. In Bhagavatam is mentioned that prana, the soul actually resides on one of the life airs, which is called prana. So soul doesn't actually interact with the body. Soul doesn't, pushes button and, just take this and push that and your arm goes here and your other arm goes like this. No, the soul doesn't do this. The only activity of the soul is desire. desire, and the energy emanating from the soul is actually the moving principle. This moving principle is basically prana. The life energy is moving everything within your body. So imagine soul being like a reactor, right? Like an energy source. And this prana is utilizing that energy and moving all your limbs and everything within your body. Therefore, the yogic experts, those which are expert in Hatha Yoga, they understand these 10 life airs and they know how to utilize them. And slowly, they're pushing them upwards, right? You see in the Bhagavad Gita and some of Prabhupada's books, there's this picture of a yogi sitting and, you know, there's a lot of like different plants around him. He's got long hair, big nails and everything. And you see how from top of his head literally like exploded. And the soul just leaving with the destination. Have you seen the detail? What's the destination of the soul when the soul was actually aiming? There's on that picture. It is moon. There's moon on top. And Prabhupada speaks that certain yogis can actually make their destination spiritual world if they desire so, if they're strong enough to live according to time, place, and circumstances. So these yogis, they utilize the air to literally to catapult the soul into whatever destination they desire. So this process is very nicely mentioned in this specific verse. So you can see sometimes when Vaishnavas are living in naturally, sometimes their mouth is open. Have you ever witnessed that? What does this indicate? This body is called the city of nine gates. So these nine gates, they're actually also exit points of the soul. So you can even physically witness the destination of the soul. Shishi Radha Gokulananda ki, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Shishi Gornitai ki. Certain personalities in inauspicious times, or if they have inauspicious life, the soul sometimes leave the body from lower regions. And this is very inauspicious to see. And those personalities which have been practicing Krishna consciousness, or at least been pious, the soul leaves from the upper parts of the body. That's why you can see they have open mouths when they're leaving the body. When the soul leaves the body, the prana, the life air, just pushes the soul through the upper parts. This is Hatha Yoga. This is actually the knowledge of Hatha. Then I would like to move on to one very nice point or comment from Prabhupada in the purport. Prabhupada is saying, the material color of the mind is changed when one washes it clean of the contaminations of life breathing and thereby frees it from contamination of repeated birth and deaths and situates in pure spiritual life. This is such a potent sentence. I was thinking, you can actually make purports on Prabhupada's purport. You can make purports on every single sentence that Prabhupada creates. So much depth. This for us is Gyan. For Prabhupada, it was realized. He truly realized these purports. Sometimes he said that actually Krishna was the one who was dictating these purports to me. So it's very interesting to see the word combinations that Prabhupada is using. This one specifically, the material color of the mind is changed when one washes it clean. Okay, so let's do kind of a visual bit of a, do like a visual experiment. Imagine you have a very crystal clean body of water. There's nothing inside. There's no impediment inside. So what you start doing, you take different colors, three colors specifically. You take color yellow, color red, and color blue. So you know where I'm going with this. And you start dripping one drop by one drop by one drop into this crystal body of water. What starts happening? These three colors start mingling. They start mixing. They start changing. They start creating new and new colors. So this is our mind. our mind is contaminating for millions of lifetimes with modes. Mode of goodness. Yes, even mode of goodness. Mode of passion and mode of ignorance. So these three colors are constantly contaminating the mind. But with this process of Hatha Yoga and with the process of devotional service, what happens? You're not just adding bleach within that body of water. The process actually reverses itself. So in this specific verse, what actually Yudhishthira Maharaj is doing, he's reversing it. In the time of creation, I'm not going to go into details because I'm not fully confident in going into details of creation and how the three modes of material nature are mixing together and how it is mentioned in the second canto of Bhagavatam and in the fifth canto, how the cosmos is creating. So first, the ahankars of the mind, the false ego is there. And the mind is absorbing like a sponge these three modes of material nature. So in the process of devotional service, you're basically clearing the contamination of the mind. Why specifically the mind? Because the mind is perverted reflection of the needs, desires of the soul. And what does this mean? What are the three aspects or functions of the mind? If you've done Bhakti Shastri 101. Thinking, feeling and willing. Exactly. These are the factors of the mind. Same thing with the soul. Also, the soul has thinking, feeling, and willing. It's not like when you're going to be in a spiritual world, you're not going to be thinking, you're not going to be feeling, and you're not going to be willing. All of these aspects will still be there, but in their pure state. So in the mind, the thinking, feeling, and thinking, feeling, and willing is also present. But what you do, you clear them. You clear them from the contamination. So there's one interesting thing. In the beginning of the Sanskrit term, of the Sanskrit verse, you see, Bacham Juhava Manasi. The speech was amalgamated into the Manasi. What is Manasi? The mind. Speech into the mind. So Acharyas are commenting on this. Vishwan Chakravarti Thakur is commenting that speech is very, very important in the life of a devotee. Actually, it is said there are two types of silence, right? One type of silence when you're physically silent, when you don't speak anything, when you're just completely quiet. Another type of silence is when you speak only Krishna Katha, when you speak only Krishna consciousness. Why is this silence? Why is this considered silence from a material perspective? Because you're not creating anything. You're not putting anything into the Akash. You're not taking anything. What happens is there's no material trace. Just like, you know, in the material world you have these carbons, right? Different cars are creating carbons and these carbon trays are kind of accumulating on the planet. Correct? Also cows are creating a lot of like carbon, these carbon trays. But imagine that you don't release anything outside, but still you speak. This is Krishna consciousness. Because Krishna consciousness is nirguna, without the three modes of material nature. But still you act, still you speak, still you think, still you offer paraphernalias, still you utilize the material nature for the service of the Lord, but you have no material, there's no material contamination happening. So this is how the mind functions. So vacho vegam manasakroda vegam. If one controls the vacho, the speech, if one controls the manasa, if one controls the kroda, he's actually truly a devotee who can preach Krishna consciousness, who can create other Vaishnavas. So Prabhupada emphasized speech as a great tool for liberation. Whatever we speak resembles our internal mood and emphasis, and therefore one should speak only Krishna Katha. So, I touch upon a few points about the process of devotional service for Maharaj Yudhishthira. about how Maharaj Yudhishthir utilized the process of Hatha Yoga, how Maharaj Yudhishthir made the transition from external to internal, how Maharaj Yudhishthir prepared himself what was ahead of him in terms of his next life journey. I touch upon about the different pranas, apana, and how the soul is situated in the life, on the life airs within the body, and how ultimately the goal of Krishna consciousness is utilize everything in Krishna consciousness. That means being, how is it? Prabhupada said it, that utility is the force, principle. Utility is the principle. So even this process of Hatha Yoga can be utilized for Krishna consciousness. Just like pujaris, they utilize certain mantras, also they do certain pranas, certain mudras, and then when they prepare, they start worshipping the Supreme. So we can utilize different yogic processes in devotional service. And just like Maharaj Yudhishthir, we can prepare ourselves for the next journey. Because whatever we practice, if it doesn't invoke the attraction for the message of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it's useless. Whatever doesn't create attraction for developing devotional service in our life is useless, just waste of time. And I'm preaching to myself, so please accept it in this way. Therefore, even this process of Hatha Yoga can be utilized nicely and correctly if we understand the goal is ultimately Krishna. So I'll finish here. I don't want to go over time. If there are any questions, points, comments, and whatever you desire to share, please do now. We still have a few minutes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for your class. Really, really nice. Really, really cool class. I had a question in regards to, there's a point that was being made as you were discussing how the body functions, and in that, the soul doesn't really, factor in as the body moves, but the soul does its job of desiring. That's like its primary thing. And you also did touch on later on about the mind and how thinking, feeling, and willing is happening both in the material and spiritual. So I just wanted to ask, like, when we've taken to devotional service, we have this desire, to take to Krishna consciousness. And even as we're doing this practice, our mind still springs up, how I see it, is some forms of desires that, we also don't want. So how do we distinguish when it's the soul's desiring, or is it just always the mind? Is it the mind that's desiring to become Krishna conscious, or is this coming from the soul, and is there a difference between when we're having material desires and spiritual desires from where they spring up?
Very nice question. So the question is interesting, and the question is like, how do I distinguish between the desires of the mind and the desires of the soul? Since we've been contaminating and kind of indulging in different activities throughout many, many lifetimes, there's, as I mentioned, that analogy with the body of water, the three drops of material nature are still present. So with the process of devotional service, slowly withdrawing those three modes out of that crystal body of water. So that means that certain impediments are still present, and those impediments are still involved in decision-making and in desire-making in our present life. Therefore, because we're slowly, slowly purifying ourselves, we even see that we can compare ourselves from where we've been 10 years ago and where we are now. Our desires changed, that's for sure. Now our desires are more spiritual. Before, that our desires was how to accumulate, money, fame, glory, adoration, possessions, so on and so forth. Therefore, we can see the change of those desires. And I would say as the time progresses, the desires become more and more crystal clear. And the mind will not be anymore kind of a paraphernalia for embodying the soul, but will become actually a tool to freeing the soul. Just like Prabhupada says in the end of the purport, it will be freed from absorption in material contamination. The pure soul will be able to return home back to Godhead. So rather the mind will be an enemy, will become a friend. Hare Krishna. Rasaraj Krishna Prabhu, and then Jagat Priya Mataji.
Thank you for the class, Prabhu. You're just talking about the externals and the internals when we prepare for japa, when we prepare for different parts of devotional service. To help in my japa, I also want to take on a few pointers that you gave. Breathing, reading verses, reading poems and songs by acharyas. I just wanted to ask everyone else what they feel is really, really helpful, including yourself, or what is really helpful to internalize before japa. Externally, we have Tulsi Maharani, Association of Devotees. Deities are right there, just behind the curtains. But what else can we do to internalize?
Mm-hmm. What do devotees do? Srinivas is probably next to you, right?
Well, Prabhupada asked the question, how to overcome offenses in your chanting? And Prabhupada says, just do more chanting. So, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in one of the Prabhupada's, Prabhupada says, 16 rounds is just for the neophytes. So, you have to build up on your chanting so over time, and then, it'll come. There's no limit to two things. The limits to everything: eating, sleeping, working, recreation. To reading Bhagavatam and chanting holy name, no limits.
Hare Krishna. Nicely spoken, Srinivasa.
It's just how much, what level you can manage to do it on, that's it.
Okay, maybe we can have one other reflection of who would like to give advice on chanting, and then Jagat Priya Mataji would like to share her question or comment. Anyone would like to share what is their sadhana before chanting? Anyone wants to keep it to themselves?
Quite personal.
It's a secret.
It's quite personal.
Actually, I think it should go to Jagat Priya now, because if you could ask him.
Then Jagat Priya Mataji, please.
Take my question.
Whatever you feel like, please.
I have, because you mentioned in your class about devotees also, sometimes you said passing away, having the mouth open, but you didn't say then, so what does it indicate?
Yes.
So I just wanted to...
It indicates...
The indication is for devotees, everything different.
It is one of the indications that from which gate on the body the soul is leaving. So I don't want to make it very visual, but certain people, which, as I mentioned, don't have very auspicious life, some of them, because of the life air is moving within their body, they lose, certain... they basically defecate when they leave the body. This is also one of the inauspicious indications in the Shastra, which that the soul lived for lower planetary regions. Of course, because we engage ourselves in devotional practices, doesn't really matter. Many great Vaishnavas in our movement left seemingly inauspicious, in an inauspicious way. But because they've been protected by their bhakti, it doesn't really matter. So this was purely from perspective of Hatha Yoga and from kind of a material perspective, you can say. But for a devotee, all these rules and regulations, they don't apply. It is said, like, just like a person who's drowning in the Ganges doesn't need to take a purificatory bath. So it means the one who's drowning in the bhakti doesn't need to purify himself when he's leaving the body. Like Shraddha ceremony, recently we have this few weeks of Shraddha, right? Which means that you offering oblations to your ancestors so they may have auspicious next life. According to Krishna consciousness, we don't want that. Who wants to have a next life, right? I want you to have a next body. I want you to have a next good birth in your Brahmanical family. Who wants that? We don't actually wish this for the Vaishnavas. I wish you have a very strong body in your next life. I wish you are very erudite in your next life. I wish you are very wealthy in your next life. Who wants that? No one wants that. So this is karma kanda. For a devotee, even seemingly inauspicious is the most auspicious. So these are some externals that how the soul may leave the body. But for a Vaishnava, it doesn't really apply.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you very much. Cyrus Prabhu.
So with the couple of weeks Shraddha just gone, so for Kamakanda, the process of so it's not, it does not apply to us directly, but how do devotees, how does our practice help the ancestors? Because Shraddha's design is given to help them to maybe gain momentum in the next life, in the life they're in, or maybe to help them to gain some, maybe to bring, as you say, a better life next time, or a spiritual life. Or put it this way, to simplify it, it gives them the opportunity to come into devotional life next time, or to take up spiritual practice. Is that the case?
Yes.
It's not just to get a material body, but it gives them something else.
By you becoming a pure devotee, or by you becoming a devotee and practicing devotional service, even before that, they render some service unto you, right? Your parents, they've been feeding you, your family members have been taking care of you. So even you haven't, let's say, technically, or you haven't really engaged yourself so much so in devotional practice in that period of time. But Krishna recognized that whatever they did, that the service to his devotee, and he will give them benedictions. By you becoming a devotee, he will recognize the service given to you even before devotional service. Principle from Bhagavatam, Dhruva Maharaj, right? When he was offended by the mother, what was her name? Krishna. Say that again. Surichi. Surichi, she offended Dhruva Maharaj by saying, you cannot sit on the lap of your father because you haven't took birth from my womb. That was an offense. But he was not a devotee in that time. Dhruva Maharaj was not pure devotee as such in that time. But Krishna accepted that as an offense when he became a devotee. So same thing, you can reverse it. Right? Now you're a devotee. Whatever service was rendered to you by your family members, Krishna will take that in consideration. And he will deliver that pious and spiritual credit. Prahlad Maharaj, he delivered seven generations up, seven generations down, just by him being a pure devotee. So that's how Krishna consciousness is beyond rules and regulations of this so-called karmakanda.
So he says seven generations will be delivered before and after, but it doesn't. Does he say exactly? Because it could take many, many, many births before that deliverance happens. We don't.
But they will be delivered.
They will be delivered.
Yeah. So they will have that opportunity to better practice Krishna consciousness more directly.
Yeah. So at some point they will come to Krishna consciousness because of this.
No doubt.
Okay.
No doubt. Okay, last question by comment by Prajan Prabhu. And then we'll cut
just
it.
Just one thing that I think it was Pankajanri Prabhu. It was his brother, Janani Vas. I asked him if he could arrange, in Mayapur they do little offerings to Nrisinga Dev for their families and protection of their families and things like that. He says, why do you want to do that? And I said, well, it will benefit them. And he said, aren't you chanting Hare Krishna then? And he answered the point, really. He says, if you're chanting Hare Krishna, this is above all these little offerings, because it's their tradition, they're fulfilling their nature. All these people, what is the culture in India. But he immediately put it down to Prabhupada's mercy, where he's given us... And that's why he said, aren't you chanting, you're chanting Hare Krishna? And that really answered all I needed to know, really, he said. Because this chanting of Hare Krishna is the ultimate, what is it? It's the sacrifice of the age.
That's the game changer.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought that was a nice thing. He just put it back on me. You know?
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
That was a very nice point. Okay, Rasa Krishna Prabhu.
Just a scientific question. Where is the mind situated? In the brain or in the heart?
I think it's mentioned it's in the heart.
Okay.
As far as I know. I cannot give direct reference, but as far as I remember, they said the mind refers being situated in the mind.
Thank you.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki.